All the hypersonic missiles fired by Iran have hit their targets after evading Israel's air defense systems. Iran warns that Tehran will give a harsh response to enemies who might try to cross the country's red lines and harm its national interests. And another Palestinian youth has been killed as Israeli forces launch a fresh deadly incursion into the city of Nablus in the occupied West Bank. Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital of Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Iran has retaliated against Israel over the regime's deadly attack on the Iranian embassy in Syria early this month. Iran says the attack targeted an Israeli airbase and an intelligence headquarters near Syria that were behind the deadly attack on the Iranian embassy. Hundreds of drones, ballistic and cruise missiles were used in the attack. It was conducted in several stages from multiple directions in order to suppress and overwhelm Israel's missile shields. Tehran says the attack has achieved all of its objectives. This was the first time that Iran directly attacked the Israeli-occupied territories. It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. All hypersonic missiles fired by Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps have hit their designated targets in Israel, marking the first time that Iran employs such weapons against real targets. The Israeli regime and its supporters failed to intercept any of the hypersonic missiles fired by Iran. These missiles were fired alongside drones, other ballistic and cruise missiles during the retaliatory operation against Israel. Iran is one of the few countries that possesses the technology to produce hypersonic missiles. These missiles can travel at stunning speeds and hit their targets with great precision. Iran's hypersonic missiles are highly maneuverable, enabling them to have an unpredictable flight path in order to confuse enemies' missile shields. The IRGC says tracking Iran's hypersonic missiles is impossible. Saad Nimr is a professor of political science at Birzeit University who joins us from occupied Ramallah. We have Hakimet Sakhayabiria, who's an academic and political analyst, joining us from Tehran. Welcome to you both. Saad Nimr, let me first start with you. We're looking at the technical aspect of Iran's military capacity, where the hypersonic missiles is one of them. But let's look at the bigger picture as to the impact that this has had, the first time from Iranian territory that the Israel regime was targeted, and maybe the first time that the Israel regime has felt an onslaught of this scale. In terms of the impact that's going to have on the plight of Palestinians in particular, do you think that this may force the regime to recalculate the way that it approaches the issue of Palestine, given the genocidal aggression that it's exercising right now?
Yeah, if we are talking on the strategical point or issue, it will be a little bit long time. But definitely, it's helping a lot in the overall problem in Palestine. It's now it's sitting. Iran is sitting now a new formula for the engagement with the Zionist movement and the Zionist regime. For the Palestinians, definitely that was very good, and they were very happy with what happened the day before yesterday. But at the same time, as we say, the impact or the effect of this strike, it will come gradually and later on rather than sooner. Sooner, it's it was a hit for a target which was picked carefully by the Iranian leadership, and it was hit and the decoy of lots of drones and other missiles, it was just, you know, to confuse the enemy while the other missiles are hitting the base. Now that was a great successful from our point of view. Now how that will affect the Palestinians in the long run? First of all, we know that the Israelis knew now or know that they are not going to target Iran in any moment, and that might escalate the whole situation into a regional war that they could not tolerate can deal with it. The Americans, on the other hand, who are now convincing and pressurizing Israel not to retaliate, it means that the American who helped them in bringing down some of the rockets the day before yesterday with the French and the Israeli as well, and also Jordan, we know, and other countries which participated in anticipation of the missiles. Now the Americans have a more, if you like, influence over Israel, and I think that they are going to pressurize them to finish the deal, to hand over the Palestinian prisoners for the Israeli prisoners who are captive by the Palestinian resistance. So we believe, yes, that the American now could say, yeah, see, we've been helping you, we've been protecting you, but now you have also to comply with what we want. So maybe that will be a kind of pressurizing the Israeli more to accept the deal, and in such case it will be declaration of the victory for the Palestinians and a defeat for the Israelis, since they did not achieve any of their targets in this war.
Well, Mr. Hakim, if we want to take a look at the whole scenario here, this is something that is considered to be a very measured response from the Iranian side, and many don't look at it or understand that was the case, because on one hand you have Iran that actually forewarned from days ago that it was going to conduct a retaliatory attack, and it went ahead and did that anyways, and it did that with a combination of different types of items that it has in its military weaponry arsenal, which included these hypersonic missiles, which hit their targets. And that's another aspect of this, that it sent the message where it can hit targets with pinpoint accuracy. Mm-hmm. How does that change the equation militarily in the region against the Israeli regime and for Iran, and the message it sends to the regional countries at the same time?
Yes, it is one thing for military analysts and generals to talk about the idea that Iran has reached overmatch, something that was talked about in a New Yorker article by General McKenzie, CENTCOM leader, previous CENTCOM leader, United States official, that he said that Iran has reached the capability, a sort of capability that it is very difficult for the United States or any other power to basically control it militarily, let alone to defeat it militarily. But that it is one thing to talk about it, and it is another thing to see it happen and actually be realized. So this is what we are witnessing, that we are seeing the very complex military power that Iran has been able to build over the years, and beside that, we are witnessing the military, the strategic military thinking of the IRGC that was able to carry out this complex operation and get through with it successfully. So it is very important. A very important thing that we are witnessing right now. It is going to change the calculations of the players on the ground, of course, including the United States and Israeli regime. I hope that this is going to be something that is going to work towards bringing about more stability to the region. Before what happened 2 nights ago, the Israeli regime looked at the Palestinian people and, of course, any other target that it had in its mind as defenseless populations. In the case of the Palestinian people, the Israeli regime looks at it as a defenseless indigenous population that has to be either controlled or eliminated in order for the Israeli settler colonialist machine to work and move forward. But now I think they have to look at things differently, and they have to see the reality on the ground, which is that not only aren't these people defenseless in terms of world public opinion, you know, that because of the, you know, the very awakening that we are seeing in terms of the public opinion being on the side of the Palestinian people, being against the genocidal actions of the Israeli regime, but also we are witnessing that there is, you know, a real power on the ground that is going to take action whenever it is necessary, with, you know, with precision, and is ready to carry out even more stronger action if the Israeli regime, you know, makes a wrong decision in retaliation.
All right. Thank you very much. Let me thank our guest there from Ramallah, Saad Nimr, Professor of Political Science at Brzezinski University, and Hakimia Sarayberia, Academic and Political Analyst. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this news review. The U.S. Security Council has held an emergency meeting at the request of the Tel Aviv regime following Iran's drone and missile attacks on Israeli targets in the occupied territories. In an opening speech, the UN chief reiterated his condemnation of the Israeli attack on the premises of the Iranian embassy in Damascus.
The principle of inviolability of diplomatic and consular premises and personnel must be respected in all cases, in accordance with international law, as I stated when condemning the 1 April attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus. Madam President, it's time to step back from the brink. It's vital to avoid any action that could lead to major military confrontations on multiple fronts in the Middle East. Civilians are already bearing the brunt and paying the highest price.
Guterres further called for de-escalation in the region. He then reminded UN member states of their collective responsibility to work toward the establishment of an immediate humanitarian ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. The UN chief also highlighted the importance of delivering humanitarian aid to residents of Gaza and securing the release of all captives. He added that all UN members are duty-bound to stop Israel's acts of violence in the occupied West Bank and re-establish safe navigation in the Red Sea. He urged efforts to further promote regional and international peace and security. Also speaking at the Security Council's emergency meeting, the Russian envoy to the UN once again condemned the Israeli strike on the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Damascus, urging UN member states to denounce such an act. The Russian envoy further lashed out at the US, Britain, and France for refusing to abide by principles of international law, namely on the immunity of diplomatic facilities. Separately, the Chinese ambassador to the UN also condemned the Israeli regime's attack on the Iranian embassy in Syria. He dismissed the incident as a gross violation of the UN Charter and international law. By launching such an attack, he added that Tel Aviv violated the sovereignty of both Syria and Iran. Meanwhile, Iran's ambassador and permanent representative to the UN said that Iran's drone and missile strike on Israeli targets in the occupied territories was in retaliation for the Israeli strike on the Iranian embassy. Iran's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, in a phone call with his Russian counterpart, says the Operation True Promise meant to warn Israel that any future aggression will be answered. Amir Abdollahian confirmed that the Operation True Promise was executed to punish the Zionist regime for its recent crimes. Amir Abdollahian further signified the importance of Russia's role in de-escalating tensions in the region. Russia's foreign minister, for his part, criticized some members of the U.S. Security Council for not condemning Israel's strike on Iran's embassy in Syria. Sergei Lavrov also mentioned that Russia strongly supports Iran in exercising its inherent right to defend itself. Tehran says stage by stage Iran will give stronger responses in order to deter and to punish any aggressor who might cross its red lines.
Iran does not seek escalation of tension in the region. Iran stresses again that it is committed to the goals and aspirations as per the United Nations Charter and international law regarding passing the red lines of Iran. In any stage, Iran will stand stronger than the previous stage in order to create deterrence and to punish the aggressor, the violator, or any illogical and illegal move. Iran will take action. So I should highlight again that Iran's action was necessary and proportionate, and it hit military targets.
Khalani said Iran's action was completely legitimate and in accordance with the UN Charter. He said the operation was carried out after diplomatic ultimatums were ignored by Israel's allies. He added that Western countries should appreciate Iran for its responsible behavior and restraint towards Israel. The spokesman also said inaction of the UN Security Council and the irresponsible behavior by the US, UK, and France forced Iran to take action in order to defend its security and national interests. At least one Palestinian has been killed as the Israeli occupying forces launch another deadly incursion into the northern West Bank city of Nablus. The regime's raids in the West Bank have intensified since its genocidal war on the Gaza Strip began. The U.S.-Israeli genocidal war in Gaza enters day 192 as the regime steps up its aerial and artillery strikes against the central part of the besieged strip. The Gaza Health Ministry said 43 Palestinians have been killed and 62 others wounded in the past 24 hours. Five people have been killed in Israeli strikes targeting Nusayrat refugee camp in the central part of the war-torn strip. Warplanes also launched attacks against the house in the Al-Maghazi refugee camp in Deir al-Balah. Gaza's health officials say the number of civilians killed in Israel's six-month war on the blockaded territory has exceeded 33,700, mostly women and children. Nearly 76,400 others have been injured. The regime has also increased its violence against Palestinians in the West Bank. The Palestinian Health Ministry says 464 Palestinians have been killed and 4,800 others injured in the occupied territory since October 7, 2023. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered on June 23, 2015 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution. I would like to present a short history of these negotiations. Our negotiations with the Americans are, in fact, different from our negotiations with P5+1. The Americans themselves asked for these negotiations, and their proposals date back to the time of the 10th administration. So the negotiations with the Americans began before the arrival of the current administration. They made a request and chose an intermediary. One of the honorable personalities in the region came to Iran and met with me. He said that the American president had called him, asking him to help. The American president said to him that they want to resolve the nuclear matter with Iran and that they would lift sanctions. Two fundamental points existed in his statements. One was that he said they would recognize Iran as a nuclear power. Second, he said that they would lift sanctions in the course of 6 months. Through that intermediary, he asked us to negotiate with them and to resolve the matter. I said to that honorable intermediary that we do not trust the Americans and their statements. He said, "Try it once more," and we said, "Very well, we will try it this time as well." This was how negotiations with the Americans began.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
I would like to raise a point for the attention of officials. Of course, everyone should pay attention to it. In global challenges, reason dictates that we take two arenas into consideration. One is the arena of reality and action. So one arena is the arena of reality and action, which is the main arena. In the arena of reality and action, the official who is trying to pursue his activities creates certain assets and resources. This is one arena. Another is the arena of diplomacy and policy. In the arena of diplomacy and policy, this official turns the assets into a concession and national advantage for his country. If one is empty-handed in the first arena, one cannot do anything in the second arena either. You should have an advantage and an asset in the first arena, the arena of action, reality, and fieldwork.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You've guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You've guided me from all the ways that were wrong. I want to thank you for bringing me home.
Dear listeners, this is the second part of A Window to Palestine. A Window to Palestine.
Ya estamos de regreso para seguir las conversaciones que hemos tenido.
We are now back to continue the conversation we had to learn about the Palestinian diaspora in Chile. Today I invite you to talk with Valentina Salvador Huagui, a Chilean doctor of Palestinian origin, who has been working recently since the beginning of the genocide in Gaza with a group of doctors to try to help. Let's learn a little bit more about Valentina through the following video.
Un poco más sobre Valentina.
Valentina Salvador es nieta de palestinos.
Valentina Salvador is the granddaughter of Palestinians. She studied medicine and is a specialist in surgeries for oncological diseases. She learned the love of cooking from her grandmother and grew up with recipes that she still continues to prepare and that connect her with the cultural traditions of her homeland. In 2017, she traveled to Palestine as part of a program that brought together the diaspora from different continents. She returned with the memory of a kind, happy, and welcoming people who enjoyed life with simplicity despite the tensions of the occupation, the wall, and the many shortcomings. As part of the Doctor Society of Palestine, where some 300 specialists participate, they began to pressure scientific societies to play a more active role and denounce the genocide. The events, however, have led them to continue their work raising funds to send medical supplies through the Chilean embassy in Egypt. Valentina believes that not only is the lack of food and water serious, the treatments that were left unfinished, the lack of vaccines and the lack of medical care in short are also other slow and silent ways of exterminating the Palestinian nation.
De exterminar al pueblo palestino.
Hola Valentina, muchas gracias por haber aceptado esta.
Hello Valentina, thank you very much for accepting our invitation. You are third generation. On what date and for what reasons do your parents migrated here?
Acerca de la llegada de tus padres.
I'm sorry, your grandparents.
De mis abuelos, sí. Daniel, muchas gracias por la invitación. Un honor.
Well, of course, my grandparents. Daniel, thank you very much for the invitation. It is an honor to be here representing the doctors of Palestine. Look, my family on both sides come more or less before the Nakba. It was mainly as a result of the persecutions by the Ottoman Empire. For example, my family name is Salvador. My grandfather arrived in Chile around 1910. Several of his children were born in Betlalal, but my grandfather was born here in Chile, in the town of Catamu, where they settled upon their arrival in Chile. On the other hand, in depth, my grandfather's wife, Victoria Issa, came to Chile directly from Palestine. Around 1929-1930, my grandfather's father arrived here with them, and from there, in the bottom line, the family has settled in this land.
Aquí hay dos eventos que es importante destacar.
Here there are two events that are important to highlight. It was around the First World War that the Palestinians arrived. Turkish Ottoman Empire decided for the first time to force the inhabitants to defend the empire in any possible wars that might arise. And they began, for the first time, to recruit the firstborn children, the eldest of each family. And that makes many Christians, and also Jews, send their children out of Palestine to avoid taking them to the war. In the case of the grandmother, she surely came because of the great general strike of the 29th, where the colonization process had already begun, and we were at the gates of the Nakba, but the Nakba was already planned. This is very interesting because this also generates surely the same thing that happened in your family. A generational gap. The children of that do not have much of a relationship with Palestine. They do not pass on the language, for example. And it is always the third generation that recovers Palestinianity. What was that process like? What was it that set it off? And what are you up to today?
¿Qué fue lo que lo detonó y en qué estás hoy día?
Mira, tal cual como tú dices,
look, just like you say, it happens to me also. Well, obviously, in my parents' house, they spoke an Arabic language. And being born in Chile, they kind of had to recover everything because in Chile, things were a little different. It's just like you say, they kind of experienced Palestine in the house. Something that was different for us. I think I get emotional because of the topic, sorry. But I think I have returned to it. I come from a school with a lot of social sense, a lot of politics. I don't think I had ever questioned it, like where it comes from. But yes, I think it was my dad who instilled it into me. Regardless of the fact that I seldom spoke, there was always these Palestinian things in my house. Always, always. Everything had to do with it. Food, traditions. And I think this provoked my sense of curiosity to investigate what this Palestinian thing they were talking about is. So I started to investigate, to learn from history. When people spoke to me, I liked to have information and tell them what this is, what Palestine is, what is happening, because they asked me at school. Deep down, there was an important Palestinian group that would talk about the issue of Palestine, and sometimes I felt like I had to participate in such arguments. The Palestinian issue always resonated in my head. It's good, it catches my attention because I'm the most Palestinian-like person in my generation.
In fact, you are the first to travel to Palestine.
Exactly. In 2017, I said that I really have to go. I have to see what happens. And in addition to being the most beautiful trip of my life, at the same time, it is also a very powerful trip. Encountering this reality of injustice and encountering this reality of their everyday lives are really heartbreaking. And it is sad because they are very good people, a good nation, but in the end, they are having a hard time on a daily basis. And they are used to it. They have normalized this. I have friends who have instilled resistance into their lives. They don't have the possibility of being seen. I have a group of friends who are actually marathoners called Right to Movement. And they were in Chile here recently. And the truth is that I kind of see in them a hope of getting out of this. But in the end, there is no great help for them to achieve this hope.
Como que finalmente no hay ayuda mayor como para que lo logren.
Hay una pregunta que
There's a question that I always ask here because not many people understand it. When I took my first trip, I had a very special feeling, and I want to know if you felt the same thing and how you experienced it, because here you were actually returning to a place where you have never been to.
Yes, it's very strange.
Three different facets of the Zionist project. First, some Israeli citizens are enjoying watching the genocide from a hill in the occupied territories and cheering their army doing what the Nazis did with them. It is as if it were a film made in Hollywood. Second, we see an Israeli project, a real estate project to be located in the Gaza Strip, a coastal area oriented towards the north and with tourist potential, highly desired by Western imperialists. Third, we see images of the Nakba and all the destruction and this whole plan known as the Plan Dalet to expel about 700,000 Palestinians, destroying 500 villages, and the life, history, and geography of those who had lived in this territory for centuries. But let's see the story on the maps to see the evolution of this, to see if, indeed, as Finkelstein said, what happened on October 7th justifies what came afterwards. Does what has happened in the last 75 years justify the complete dismantling of a fascist and neo-colonial regime like that of Israel? This is Palestine at the beginning of the 20th century, where Jews, Christians, Muslims, and atheists lived together without any problem and in absolute peace and brotherhood, with a proportion of the Jewish population close to 5%. Shortly after, in the first Zionist Congress in Basel, Switzerland in 1897, Theodor Herzl, recognized as the father of contemporary Zionism, presented his project called the Jewish State to form a Jewish national home in Palestine. Of course, the lobby carried out throughout the West, and with the main powers of the time allowing them to achieve in 1917 the Balfour Declaration, known as the formal beginning of the Palestinian tragedy. Great Britain, the current England, without having any right to do so, committed themselves to the Zionist organization and to give Palestine a group of foreigners coming from all over the world. This declaration was put into practice by an illegal immigrant that sought to change things on the ground and change the proportion of the population. In 1947, the population of Jewish religion was about 30%, but above religion, the Zionist population came in, but not only as refugees seeking support, but to start the programs of Tsarist Russia and also the Nazi Holocaust. They came to usurp everything. They made the newly born United Nations, which had been created from the failure of the Society of Nations, approved the partitions of Palestine, an organization that was established to protect the right of self-determination of the people, approved the partition of Palestine. And guess who were not invited to the meeting? The Palestinians. That is, in complete absence of the main owners of the land, they gave 55% of historical Palestine to the Zionist organization and 44% divided into three unconnected zones to the Palestinians. Clearly, there was no possibility that either of these two states would be consolidated as they were intended. Obviously, the Palestinians rejected, but Zionism also rejected it and advanced in the war of 1948 until it occupied 78% of historical Palestine in 1980. What we know today as occupied territory remained in the hands of Jordan and Egypt, but this lasted about 20 years until the war of 1967, where Israel made use of its great military power and its always strong support from the Western powers, and mainly from the United States, from Europe and Germany, tried to pay the blame for the Nazi Holocaust with Palestinian blood. They advanced on the entire territories and on the heights of the Syrian Golan and a strip of Lebanese territories that remained occupied for more than two decades. Today, after years of extermination, after years of a genocidal policy on the parts of Israel with the Oslo Agreement, the Palestinian territories are reduced to a 15% and also in the form of small bastustans without connections to each other. In such a way, they not only intend to drown the Palestinian population, but also the Palestinian economy. Now they continue encouraging or forcing in every possible way the Palestinian population to leave the place. But we Palestinians have resisted stubbornly. We have stayed on the lands to which we belong, and we have no intention of abandoning this land to make way for the continuity of the neocolonial Zionist project. And that is why we today face an ongoing genocide in Gaza, because the leaders of the Zionist project have understood that the foreigners can never defeat those who have remained in this land forever. I offer you the floor. We have time for two questions, please.
Tiempo para dos preguntas, por favor.
Un saludo. Mi nombre es Jorge Avedrapo, profesor.
Greetings, my name is Jorge Avedrapo. Here is my question. It is true that the Zionists considered several options, territorial options, to carry out their projects among some Latin American countries. I mean, finally, what could happen in the future at a global level if the advance of Israel's colonial project is not stopped?
El avance del proyecto colonial de Israel.
Efectivamente, Jorge, entre el primero y el cuarto congreso sionista.
Indeed, Jorge, between the first and the fourth Zionist congresses, most of them held in Basel, Switzerland, several alternatives were put into discussion, including Uganda and Chilean-Argentine Patagonia. The underlying theme was that there was no excuse that could be used to expel the inhabitants of these territories, and therefore they resorted to the myths of the biblical promise and the chosen people to sustain a colonial project like Zionism. And that is why Palestine ended up being chosen. Furthermore, if one looks at this as a projection not only of a Palestinian issue, because the problem is not only here. This is a problem of the global North-South confrontation, and therefore what happens in Palestine will have an intimate relationship with what happens in the Western Sahara, with what happens in other parts of the world, in Gualmapo, in our country, where the hegemonic classes, world imperialism, and transnational imperialism must do everything possible to protect the interests they harvest through occupying every inch of this territory and controlling every inch of the market and effectively appropriating any common property or natural resources. This strategy exists in the world. Therefore, from my humble perspective, the only possibility of reaching a just solution in Palestine is the overcoming of capitalism on a global scale.
Es la superación del capitalismo a escala global.
Hola, mi nombre es Carlota.
I am Carolina Espina. I am president of the Luis Emilio Recovery Collection and Research Center in Zeiler. My question is, why is the word apartheid used to refer to the Israeli policy against Palestine?
El apartheid es un concepto que se utiliza.
Apartheid is a concept that is used to refer to states or societies where there are two different systems inside them. For example, in South African apartheid, where within the same country, South Africa, there was a system for whites and a system for people of African descent. This system is seen today in Palestine and also in Israel, because not only within Israel there are first and second category citizens and different systems for those who are historically Palestinian and for Israeli citizens, but things are also tough for those who have recently arrived there and have just adopted Israeli citizenship. That's because they are Zionists and have many more rights than the Palestinians who have lived in Israel since before their birth. In addition, what we are seeing today in Gaza and the West Bank is a situation where the Israelis and the occupation, the illegal occupying power, the illegal Israeli settlers have all the rights, but the Palestinians have none. That is why the word apartheid was coined, and that is why it has been expanding the possibility of everyone recognizing the Israeli occupation as an apartheid system. We must never forget that in 1974, the United Nations General Assembly decreed that Zionism was a form of racism, homologously comparable to South African apartheid. This is while, due to the changes in the correlation of forces and North American and European pressure, this resolution was annulled several decades later. But this has not annulled the spirit and essence of Zionism, that in all these years, nothing has changed.
Que en todos estos años no ha cambiado nada. Lo he mencionado en otros programas.
I have mentioned it in other programs, and I reiterate it today with more force than ever. Palestine, in its 5,000 years of history, has lived only 120 years of peace. The Palestinian people consisted of an ethnic strain absolutely intercultural, composed of Jews, Christians, Muslims, atheists, belonging to diverse peoples who have settled in Palestine at some point in history. They have been there since before the first invaders arrived, and they will surely be there after the last ones leave. Today, thousands of supposed Israeli citizens have abandoned Israel because they no longer feel safe among the Palestinians. The Palestinian nation sink their legs and roots into the ground of their homeland, where they are born, grow, and die. That's because Palestine is their land. I invite you to watch this program next week to learn more about the concept of genocide in Gaza. Don't miss the next episode of A Window to Palestine.
En el próximo capítulo de Ventana a Palestina.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Iqra. بسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآنك جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانك ودعوتك ربي بقرآنك.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem. Inshallah, today we'll talk about Ayah 37 of Surah An-Nisa on page 84. Four. Brothers and sisters, turn to page 84. Ayah 37 of Surah An-Nisa, inshallah. So, let's listen to the recitation first.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. الذين يبخلون ويأمرون الناس بالبخل ويكتمون ما آتاهم الله من فضله وأعتدنا للكافرين عذابا مهينا.
That was nice. Nice recitation. So now, inshallah, we'll mention some important points about this ayah. Then we'll move on to the practical tajweed rules, inshallah. So, let me read once. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Allah Almighty says in this ayah, الذين يبخلون ويأمرون الناس بالبخل ويكتمون ما آتاهم الله من فضله وأعتدنا للكافرين عذابا مهينا. Allah Almighty says, الذين يبخلون, those who are stingy, وَيَأْمُرُونَ النَّاسِ بِالْبُخْلِ, and bid others, invite others, okay? Command other people to be stingy. Who are they? مُخْتَالًا فَخُورًا. In the previous ayah that Allah Almighty says, إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يُحِبُّ مَنْ كَانَ مُخْتَالًا فَخُورًا. Who are مُخْتَالًا فَخُورًا? Those who are swaggering braggarts, okay? الَّذِينَ, those who are stingy. Okay, stingy. In the previous ayah, Allah Almighty was talking about being good to the parents, being good to the neighbors, being good to friends, the relatives, friends, these things. Okay, Ibn Sabil, for example, Allah Almighty was saying these things, yeah, in commanding us to be good to them. And we say that there are many steps for being good. Yeah? How to be good. Sometimes they need money, help them with money if you have. Sometimes they need what? Like, you need to support them.
Motivate.
Like, motivate them. Okay? Support them. Sometimes they, for example, if you have, for example, enough ability, enough time, enough energy to help them, for example, with some studies, help them. Sometimes, for example, they have guests, a lot of guests, okay? And they don't have any room for their guests, okay? Like their house, they have a small house, okay? But they have a lot of guests, okay? So if you have a room free, okay? Invite his guests in your house, okay? And let them stay there at night, okay? If you have free, for example, room for them. This is also called what? Being good to the neighbors. Nowadays it happens, okay? Sometimes people don't have that much money, okay? For example, to rent what? A hall, for example. A hall, okay? So what do they do? For example, for their like guests, okay? They ask their neighbors, okay? That is it possible that our guests tonight, we have, for example, a majlis, a khatm, okay? Khatmul Quran, for example. We have a rawda, for example, here. Can our guests like stay in your home tonight? They will say, yeah, this is called being good to the neighbors. That's all. So, if somebody does not, says, no way, I don't like, it's not my guest, okay? It's your guest, none of my business. Then we say, your neighbor, please, let's be good to each other. I don't care about you. I have nothing to do with you. Neighbor, okay, I don't care. If somebody is like this, Allah Almighty does not like them. إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يُحِبُّ كُلَّ مَنْ كَانَ مُخْتَالًا فَخُّرًا. Those who are stingy, look, stingy. Or he has money, enough money, okay? He can afford his expenses. He can fund his, for example, children. So he has enough like money in his account. So he can help an orphan go to school. Like, for example, that orphan, he doesn't have a dad. He doesn't have good economy, okay? He cannot fund himself to go to, for example, a language center, to go to a Quran class, okay? To go to, for example, a computer class, a sport, okay? So he is really suffering this. Like everybody goes and he can't, he's really in trouble. So if you have, fund him. Give him 60 thumans to go and join, for example, a computer class. To join a language class. To join, for example, a Quran class. To join, for example, what? A sport class. It's really good. Don't be stingy. So Allah Almighty says, "Alladhina yabkhulun," those who are mukhtalan fakhura, that Allah Almighty does not love them, does not like them, is those who are stingy and also don't invite other people as well to be stingy. Yeah? So don't be, at least don't be this bad, okay? This bad. So, but mukhtalan fakhura are those who are stingy and they ya'muruna an-nas bil bukhl and bid others also to be stingy. ويكتمون ما آتاهم الله من فضله, and conceal whatever Allah has given them out of His grace. Really, sometimes it happens. Okay, then Allah Almighty says, وأعتدنا للكافرين, and we have prepared for the faithless people, those who don't care, those who do not do the worship of Allah. اعبدوا الله ولا تشركوا, those who do not worship Allah, and they ascribe partners to Allah Almighty. That in previous ayah we talked about this. So Allah Almighty says what? And we have prepared for the faithless a humiliating punishment, a severe punishment. That's all. قرآني نبض حياتي, قرآني طهر ذاتي, قرآني عصمة أمري, قرآني طوق نجاتي. قرآني نبض حياتي.
How to learn Quran easy. What is the correct way to read the Quran? What is the correct way to learn Arabic and understand the Quran? Be with, let's recite the Quran.
Well, inshallah, mention the tajweed rules, the important ones, right after, like, we finished the explanation. Actually, we finished. That's enough, I think, okay? Our brothers and sisters, Fawad and Ali Nasir, inshallah, refer to the tafasir books to learn more, alright? Okay? About this verse. Yes. You have any questions?
No.
No? So, brothers and sisters, let's move on to the important tajweed rules in this ayah. الَّذِينَ يَبْخَلُونَ وَيَأْمُرُونَ النَّاسَ بِالْبُخْلِ وَيَكْتُمُونَ مَا آتَاهُمُ اللَّهُ مِنْ فَضْلِهِ وَأَعْتَدْنَا لِلْكَافِرِينَ عَذَابًا مُهِينًا. So, can you explain some of the rules for it?
In the first word, الَّذِينَ, it has لَامُ التَّعْرِيف.
لَامُ التَّعْرِيف, so
you assign Hamzatul Wasl with a fatha.
Good job. Whenever you have lamu tarif in a word, that word is what? A noun.
Yes.
So for this kind of nouns, whenever you want to read the Hamzatul Wasl, pronounce the Hamzatul Wasl, you must assign it with fatha. Put a fatha on the top. Al-Ladina Alhamdulillah Ar-Rahman. Right? Al. This. So. That's it. Very easy. So here, الَّذِينَ يَبْخَلُونَ. The next point, ذَال, pronounce the ذَال correctly, خَا correctly, next letters, هَمْزَ correctly, وَيَأْمُرُونَ النَّاسَ بِالْبُخْلِ وَيَكْتُمُونَ مَا آتَى
هُمْ
هُمْ, the هَا, pronounce it correctly, مُلَّهُ correctly, مِنْ فَضْلِهِ
ضَاد
correctly, وَأَعْرْ
Ayn.
A and Ayn. Hamza and Ayn. Sometimes students might say A. This is not A. This is A. Or sometimes they will say A. They mix them up, okay? So pronounce the A first and then Ayn. A. Read it, Ali Nasir.
Wa A.
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 Ahsan. For what? Huh? Come on, read. He's shy. Okay. وَأَعْتَدْنَا. So, then the next letter, which is important here, is, ذَال, we mentioned. That's all. These letters are important, okay? Now, let's get back to the word يَبْخَلُونَ. Two important rules are here. One, with the letter ba, and yes. The next one with the letter
خَا.
So, ba is sucking here. Appears sucking, no vowels. So, what do you do with this?
We produce a bouncing sound.
Ah, good job. Echoing sound. Yab. Yab. Not a haraka. Not a vowel sound. Yabano. Yab. Yab.
The letter.
Yab. Khaluna. Now the letter kha.
It's pronounced heavily.
Heavily. It's a heavy letter. Wa yab khaluna. Not khaluna, no. Because it doesn't have an alif. Yab khaluna. Alladhina yab khaluna. وَيَأْمُرُونَ النَّاسَ نَا وَيَأْمُرُونَ then النَّاس noon is joined with the noon, okay? Hamzatul Wasl will be skipped here. Lamu Ta'rif will be skipped here because right after the Lamu Ta'rif we have the letter noon, which is a sun letter. Sun letter. Amongst the sun letter, so you skip Lamu Ta'rif here. وَيَأْمُرُونَ النَّاسَ. And also when you join noon to the noon, alright? What happens? You merge them together and nasal
sound
is produced, okay? وَيَأْمُونَ this nasal sound. Extend the sound for 2 beats. وَيَأْمُونَ النَّاسَ بِالْبُخْلِ وَيَكْتُمُونَ مَا آتَاهُمُ اللَّهُ مِنْ فَضْلِ. This mad ma is jaiz, you can skip it, yes. Or extend.
Yes.
وَيَكْتُمُونَ مَا آتَاهُمُ اللَّهُ مِنْ فَضْلِهِ. Pronounce the word Allah with a heavy sound. Allah, like this. مِنْ فَضْلِهِ. مِنْ نُن ساكن plus فَا.
إِخْفَى.
إِخْفَى, hide the sound. مِنْ فَضْلِهِ, nasal sound. مِنْ فَضْلِهِ, extend the sound also. مِنْ فَضْلِهِ وَأَعْتَدْنَا this is not Hamzatul Wasl. وَأَعْتَدْنَا, no. وَأَعْتَدْنَا. This is Hamzatul Qat'a. You have to read it. وَأَعْتَدْنَا لِلْكَافِرِينَ أَعْتَدْنَا, also dal. Yes. للكافرين عذابا مهينا. Ali Nasser, tell us.
عذابا.
بم مهينا. Right, merge it. A nasal sound extended for two counts.
وأعتدنا للكافرين عذابا مهينا.
تنوين نا. It's because تنوين فتحة whenever appears at the end, you stop there. And if you stop, you change the تنوين فتحة to an ألف sound. مهينا. So, it's time for us to practice the recitation. Now, because we have learned the Tajweed rules, let's practice it let's practice this ayat, the recitation, with the Tajweed rules. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, thanks for being with us up to this point. It's the last part of our class. Let's practice all together. Listen and repeat after me.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
الذين يبخلون ويأمرون الناس بالبخل ويكتمون ما آتاهم الله من فضله
الذين يبخلون ويأمرون الناس بالبخل ويكتمون ما آتاهم الله من فضله
أحسنتم ما شاء من فضله ويأمرون همزة يأمرون
وأعتدنا للكافرين عذابا مهينا
وأعتدنا للكافرين عذابا مهينا
ما شاء الله الله bless you إن شاء الله. That's all for today, brothers and sisters. Stay with Arab English Radio إن شاء الله. Thank you so much Fawad and Ali Nasser. Thanks for being with us today, inshallah, we'll be here with you. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah wa sallallahu ala sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi at-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahum.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت